Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we continue our coverage here in Washington and live from Philadelphia, the Democratic National Convention, the fourth and final day. Hillary Clinton about to make history again as she accepts the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. My guests are Dr. Greg Carr, Chair of Afro-American Studies at Howard University, and of course, our own WHUR News reporter, Taylor Thomas, at the DNC in Philadelphia with several guests, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Joy, calling from Baltimore. Joy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. I just want to say good evening to everyone.
Hey.
And hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I'm not quite sure why we're having such a debate on what Hillary needs to say and what she needs to do and how she needs to be. We just don't need Donald Trump as president. I don't understand why there's such a discussion. We don't have a choice right now but to vote for Hillary. She is the most qualified candidate. I might not like everything about her, but I don't want Donald Trump to be president.
But hold on, Joy. Hold on. Because if I'm not mistaken, some 13 million Republicans disagree with you. And so that is why we have this debate, because this is certainly not a slam dunk done deal. So, you know, that is why we do have this debate, because we're talking about issues of likability, not the resume. It's not about the resume. These are the two most disliked presidential candidates of either party in decades. So definitely something to think about. I appreciate your phone call. Let's go back to Taylor Thomas at the DNC in Philadelphia. Taylor?
Harold?
Yes, go right ahead.
Thank you so very much. I apologize. There's a lot going on here as people
Absolutely.
Are getting in their
yeah.
space. Joining me now is Melanie Campbell, the National Coalition of Black Civic Participation. Thank you so very much for joining us on Insight here on WHUR.
Glad to be here.
Well, you've been listening in, so thank you so very much. I'm going to let you weigh in what we've been discussing about what African Americans may want to hear from Hillary Clinton tonight.
Well, her vision. Right? Her vision for where she wants to take this country. I think I've been here since Sunday, and I think there's been an exciting buildup as it relates to building unity within the Democratic Party. You know, I'm an ally group. I'm not here to promote one way or the other a candidate because I wear a nonpartisan hat. But as an observer and as a voter, I also looking to hear more from her tonight. But I think the convention, in my opinion, has definitely showed one of unity and one of coming together as a party.
So you take this information and then you do what with it if you're not here to support?
Well, we promote our issues.
Right.
We were our Black Women's Roundtable was at in Cleveland.
Okay.
In partnered with several groups, Higher Heights and others. We're here. We hosted a national unity campaign convening with about 40 national organizational leaders, focusing in on what has to happen with the black vote in 2016. But it's all about we go wherever the candidates are, and they're also at the conventions.
So, as the black woman, do you feel that Clinton has spoken to your issues?
Well, we had one thing I can say. I've actually met with Secretary Clinton along with other civil rights leaders, Mark Morial, Reverend Sharpton, and Cornell Brooks, and several others earlier in the year. Secretary Clinton responded to our presidential candidate questionnaire that we did last year, along with several other Democrats and a few Republicans, but not the current nominee for Republican, Donald Trump as Republican a nominee for the President of the United States. We are going to send him that questionnaire again now that he's been selected, so that our folks can know where candidates stand on the issues. And we dealt with many, many issues, economic issues. We asked Secretary Clinton, would she be willing to nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court? Very important to African-American
okay.
women. Never had a black woman on the Supreme Court. We focused in on education, healthcare, and all these various issues that are important to African-American women. And so that is something we've been educating African-American voters throughout the primaries, actually, with that information so that we can make informed decisions.
And I have to ask you really quickly, I know we're going to go back to Harold. How are you, if she becomes president, how are your is your organization planning to make sure that she makes good on this promise?
Well, so far, I know she's met with a lot of African Americans. I'm assuming she will continue to meet with African American leaders of all backgrounds. Ages and a very intergenerational need to make sure that leadership is not one-dimensional.
Okay, Harold?
Okay. Thank you so much, Taylor. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Chris calling from Columbia. Chris, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I think every black man should vote for Trump, and there's only one reason. You don't have a real choice, and I'll make it very, very concise and brief. If 90% of the drugs that come into America come through Latin America, and if Trump builds that wall, there's only three ways that drugs come in, sir, and that's land, sea, and air. And if he builds that wall, you're not going to have more generations of black men being shot, hurt, or locked up. And either they're going to build $57 million next year for new prisons. Either they can build that wall and stop the drugs totally because there'll be no way for the cartels to bring it through.
Of course not, because the Florida coast is completely sealed off, as is the West Coast. Come on, Chris. I mean, let's be realistic. We hear about the wall, you know, so much, and you know, it's almost like, you know, building a modern day, you know, Noah's Ark. I mean, some people would argue that the wall is really a myth and would not work. I mean, how high are you talking about here? I mean, is that really realistic?
Yes, it is, sir. Christopher Columbus, all the experts in his day said, oh, you'll never sail across the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
Naysayers until the job gets done.
Well, but Brother Chris, can I ask you a question? Brother, just very quickly, a couple of questions. Number one, you think most black men who are in prison were locked up behind drug charges?
Drugs are drug-related, sir.
Oh, no. Wait, don't. I'm just asking you whether you think most of them are locked up because of that. That's all.
Yes.
Okay. You probably should check your statistics on that, but yeah, I would suggest you kind of look at that. Let me ask you just another couple of questions. As far as Trump is concerned, what's your position on judicial appointments, particularly federal judicial appointments? Is that an important issue to you?
Yes, yes.
It is. So what kind of judges I'm asking, what kind of judges do you think that Donald Trump would appoint, particularly when it comes to sentencing guidelines and punishing black and brown people?
They're going to outnumber us 3-1.
Who is they, sweet? Who is they, sir?
Within the first 100 days, sir, they're going to give the illegals, they're going to make them citizens.
No. I asked you a very different question, but I guess you don't have an answer for it. I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, people should vote for who they want to vote for, but there should also be some type of education when it comes to voters. Donald Trump is really quadrupled down on a very particular tactic. He's playing in the politics of fear. And nationalism. And I understand you want to advocate for black men, and I do too, brother. But I think you probably should look at some of the issues. Look at when you talk about privatization of prisons, many of those business people were in Cleveland last week at the Republican National Convention. If you look at the Democratic platform, they've said that they want to take privatization of prisons out of the game. You know, you shouldn't be making money on bodies of any race, right?
Ways. But the bottom line is, we're not going to have numbers no more. Your vote's not going to mean anything, and you'll have to learn Spanish.
That sounds like a Trump vote, brother.
It took us 170 years to get the right to vote. They're going to get it within the first 100 days.
Well, Chris, I appreciate your phone call. And honestly, what's wrong with learning how to speak Spanish?
Well, I give Chris credit, because what he has articulated, that's the Trump voter, brother.
Yeah, there it is. Here's another question for you. As you know, for the past 7.5 years, civil rights leaders have often criticized President Obama for not being black enough when it comes to dealing with issues regarding African Americans. Has Hillary Clinton been too black during this campaign?
You know, our friend, Brother Michael Eric Dyson, argued and got in a little trouble a few months ago by saying that he thinks Hillary Clinton would be better for black people than Barack Obama. I don't know if I agree with him on that or not, but what I will say is that the Clintons are really centrist Democrats. And what you see with the Bernie Sanders insurrection in some ways, they pull Hillary Clinton to the left of where she would have been otherwise. You know, Barack Obama has never spoken forcefully in terms of strictly a black agenda. It's not in his DNA. Even his speech last night, which may have been the best speech he ever gave, political speech, he still balanced it. He said, for example, a young black man feels the same way as a police officer when they leave the house to go. I'm like, come on, dude. But that's Barack. Hillary Clinton can't afford to talk like that. And in fact, because she is white, albeit a white woman, I think she can be more forceful in saying some things that Barack Obama, trapped in his mind, I think, in that prison of being a black man, may feel uncomfortable saying. She might be, Harold, and in conclusion, she might be a little bit blacker than him on some of these issues.
But there you go. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to Taylor Thomas in Philadelphia. Taylor?
Yes, we have Melanie Campbell, the National Coalition of Black Civic Participants. She was ready to say something, too.
Well, I think one of the challenges for Hillary being breaking that glass ceiling is, as a woman, the way women are treated very differently as elected officials. That didn't start or stop, unfortunately, with Hillary Clinton. And so the notion of having a woman to break that ultimate glass ceiling, I think, would be good for the future of this country, that we can get it some ways past the gender a problem that we have in this country. So I think that a lot of things, and this is just my personal opinion as it relates to this, and my observation and actually my years in this work, the way she is treated and judged and treated very differently, and she's too loud, or she doesn't have the right dress, or she's and even the notion of the untrustworthiness has been something that I've been in this politics for 30 years now, mm-hmm. going on 30 years. And I know what it was like when the Clintons were in the White House, and how there would be this side joke, you know, he's the first black president. That wasn't so much about just him being able to play the saxophone. It was the way he was being treated, because he was not. He didn't have a silver spoon in his mouth coming out of Arkansas. And so he didn't fit the blue blood of most men who were elected, white men who were elected president. I remember those days and how they were treated. And so I'm not making excuses for him, but I know that I've seen and lived it. How she has been treated, I think, has been unfair because of that gender.
And interestingly, this campaign, it didn't seem like there's a large focus on, help me become the first female president. She really stuck to the issues. And I wonder if someone said something, because when she was running against Barack Obama, it was the first black president or the first female president. And I don't know if she shied away from that because of the outcome, the last race.
And President Obama had that challenge, right?
Yes.
At the end of the day, there'll be the president of the United States for all people, right?
That's right.
And so I think that having the opportunity that America has to move forward when it comes to the possibility of having a woman president, I think it's just going to be good for the country to see what has already happened. I think that change is even in the air in this room and in this place. And the diversity that you see, our organization, I wasn't personally in Cleveland, but I know that I had team members who were there for me. And also I could watch it on television like everyone else. And the diversity in Cleveland was not really there. If you just look on the floor of the Republican convention and look on the floor of the Democratic convention, party convention, it's just so stark and different. And America, the United States of America, is a diverse nation. And so we will see. We have 102 days to see how this plays out.
And Harold and Dr. Carr, I think, is also interesting, too.
Before you finish there, Taylor, I've got to take a break. Hold that thought. Also, I have a question for Dr. Carr. So stay with us. The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141, will continue live coverage of the DNC from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, as well as right here at the WHUR studios. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the DNC, the fourth and final night, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I want to ask Dr. Carr before the break. Melanie was talking about a great many things, and you were kind of nodding your head. What were your thoughts about what she was saying?
Well, I think some people call Jesse Jackson the father of the modern Democratic Party. What does that mean? When you look at his runs in 84 and 88, man, he's the one who really opened this process up. And his campaign manager, Ron Brown, is really responsible in many ways putting Bill Clinton in the White House. You know, it's very interesting that he shows back up at this convention for the first time in two decades to give a talk. Tim Kaine came off the platform to hug him yesterday.
Yes, I saw that.
Very interesting, which is a signal. You know, Kaine is well loved by a lot of black people in Richmond and Virginia. But I was shaking my head because I think about the lack of political sophistication for many of our black elected leaders. You know, there's a race dimension of this gender piece. Again, Michelle Obama could run for any office she wants, probably win. But she's been constructed in a certain way because I think black women, who are in many ways the foundation for the Clinton success, are some way still on the margin of gender. You know, Hillary Clinton wants gender solidarity and she wants to talk about being a woman, this kind of thing. But I think about the black women who we've seen the last 3 days and including today. Very powerful elected officials. And in many ways, the ceiling breakers beginning in the 1950s and 60s. You look at Representative Bass from California. You look at Carlotta Bass, who owned the California Eagle from the 50s. You look at Yvette Clark from New York, her mother before her, Una Clark, and before them, Shirley Chisholm. You know, there's a whiteness in this process that gives an advantage to Hillary Clinton. So when she reaches out for the gender question, there's a race dimension that has held in some women's black women back, and black women, including finally the rank and file black women whose vote, Jesse said this yesterday, when black people vote, black and brown people vote, progressive whites win. When they vote, that means families and women win. But black women are the core of the black vote, and she's going to have to reach out to them.
Melody, I want to ask you, do you think...
Melody's not here. I'm so sorry.
Oh, we've lost her. Okay, sorry about that.
It's okay. We have another guest for you, but before we take the break, I really wanted to say to you too, Dr. Carr and to Harold, we were talking about how it was great, you know, Melody was saying how it was great for African Americans to see and be a part of the process of electing the first black president. I also have to interject into that because a lot of people are saying too, we got and had the first African American black president, but they said then they felt like that was it. Everything was cut off. That you're going to get that, but nothing else. So I wonder if the same thing will happen with a female president, if we'll have an influx of services or things that are positive for women, because a lot of people feel like we got the presidency, but everything else, you know, the hiring for African Americans, jobs, all that stopped because it was like, we're going to give you this, but not both.
Taylor, I'd say this very quickly, and Melanie Campbell is an example of this, as are you and all the women, all the sisters who are there in Philadelphia this week. I don't think you can stop black women. I don't think you can stop women generally, obviously, who are the majority in this country, but black women in particular are in this process. They're not just being granted something. They're hardwired. You're hardwired into this process. When you look every day this week, you've seen black women at every level, state reps, local officials, mayors. Stephanie, the fact that you saw the mayor of D.C. read into the vote to the mayor of Baltimore, I'm sure Donald Trump was sitting there like, what the hell? Yeah, but they weren't appointed to those jobs. They were voted in. You know what I'm saying? Taylor, I don't think you're going to be able to to do anything but see the advance, the march of women, particularly black women.
Let's hear from your guest.
You have my guest smiling, Dr. Andra Gillespie, political science professor of Emory University. Please chime in and welcome to Insight here on WHUR.
Thank you. So, you know, I look forward to the day when a black woman is president of the United States. You know, I think we have to think about intersectionality and think about the barriers that black women face. Hillary Clinton is breaking a glass ceiling. It's really important, but she is a particularly privileged woman. So it's not just because of her race that she's privileged. She's also privileged because she was married to a former president. And so this is not the pattern that most women are going to take to the presidency, white, black, brown, or any other color. And so I think that that's really important to figure out what the second woman president looks like, because if it's another first lady, then we're sending a really bad signal about what women need to do in order to run for office. And so, you know, one of the things that I would say would be really hopeful from this is to see this bench of women in the Democratic Party, women who got elected on their own right, who were not necessarily being elected because they were the daughter of somebody, even though I'm looking at Nancy Pelosi right now and I know she's the daughter of a former congressman, or the wife of somebody, but that they've done this on their own. And so I think that that's actually going to be really important going forward, and that by breaking the glass ceiling here, we can break the glass ceiling in other ways with future candidates.
Dr. Carr, I want to talk about the Bernie Sanders factor, because if you talk about the RNC last week, Ted Cruz spitting fire from the podium, still angry, not supporting Donald Trump. And Ted Cruz had a lot of supporters on the floor. Bernie Sanders, many, many more. And he essentially lost, but there has been the opposite characterization of Bernie Sanders by the speakers from on the podium. So much respect for him. Does Hillary Clinton have to do the same?
Not necessarily, although I think that's what Monday night was about. You know, and Dr. Gillespie has written about this question of post-racial leadership. She's talking about intersectionality here. I think we cannot take out race. You know, for example, let's look at this. Insurgencies of the Democratic Party, 68. Go back to 68 when Johnson pulls out and you got the people who wanted McCarthy and they ended up with Humphrey, right, in the Broker Convention. Let's go back to the insurgency of Kennedy at a sitting president in 1980 with Jimmy Carter or Jerry Brown in 92. What I'm saying is that this is not unusual for political conventions, but in Bernie Sanders' case, what you're really seeing in many ways is a resuscitation of the Jesse Jackson Rainbow Coalition movement, except Bernie Sanders is white. And what happened in the wake of 1988? Well, Bill Clinton got in and moved the Democratic Party to the center. Democratic Leadership Committee, they basically abandoned that progressive wing. And in fact, Barack Obama in some ways is more akin to Bill Clinton than he is anybody else, rhetoric notwithstanding. Bernie Sanders in some ways is tapping into something Rachel Maddow the other night called it picking up a stitch, coming back to the Democratic Party that was more to the left. And in many ways, Hillary Clinton's move to the left has already been accomplished. No, people don't have anywhere else to go. And she's going to have to perhaps be nice a little bit more. Although, interesting, finally, Nina Turner, the way they treated Nina Turner the other night, another black woman who's been a major surrogate for Bernie Sanders, is a little shaky. I think what Hillary Clinton can do now is rely on her surrogates, rely on her team, including all those black women, to try to make those overtures. But she's going to have to pay the piper in terms of policy once she's elected, if she is elected.
Taylor, for your guest...
Yeah, Dr. Gillespie wanted to add something.
Oh, go ahead, Dr. Gillespie.
So I think I might disagree just a little bit with Dr. Carr. I think there are some similarities between Jesse Jackson's 88 run and Bernie Sanders' run this year. So I think the idea of making sure that there are progressive planks to the party platform, yeah, very, very similar to what Jackson did in 88 with apartheid. I think, you know, demanding changes to the delegate allocation system, exactly the same, and that's going to have long-term implications about what's going on. But one of the things that's actually really interesting about this convention is the pivot to the center. And so Bernie Sanders has definitely brought new people into the process. Some of the newest people to the process, some of the ones who might be the most ideologically pure, are also the ones who have protested and who swear they're not voting for Hillary Clinton. They have an option in Jill Stein. They're going to appear to be to exercise that option. And so you've seen Hillary Clinton pivot to the center. She wants to appeal to independents. She wants to appeal to moderate Republicans who are afraid of Donald Trump and can't bring themselves to vote. So she's trying to present herself as reasonable tonight so that maybe people can get past all the bad things that they've heard about her for the last 25 years and say, see, I'm safe. I know you are too afraid to vote for Donald Trump. Don't vote for Gary Johnson. Come vote for me. So I think in many ways, she's still triangulating. So she's taking a page from her husband, and Bernie Sanders is taking a page from Jesse Jackson. And so there's still going to be some contestation about what the Democratic Party of the future looks like.
Dr. Gillespie, what do you think Hillary Clinton has to do tonight when she talks about Donald Trump? Does she mention his name? Does she not mention his name? Does she go hard? Does she ignore him? What do you say?
So I don't think she's going to go hard. What they've tried to do all week is to present themselves as more sane than Donald Trump, to present themselves as pragmatic and eminently reasonable. So they've tried to humanize her. So all of the stories that talk about how she is a genuinely nice person who cares about the people close to her life were ways to try to get past the notion of Lady Macbeth, which has been around since the Clinton administration, her husband's administration. And she also has to present herself as being perfectly reasonable. So in particular, I was in Cleveland, and so I know it played very differently in the arena than it played on television. But if you were turned off by Donald Trump's shouting last week in Cleveland and saying that I am the one, Hillary Clinton's going to try to present herself as the polar opposite so that she can then go for the jugular and say, is this the person that you want to have his hand on the red phone?
Mm. There you go. In my last 2 minutes or so, your final thoughts about tonight, Dr. Carr?
I think Hillary Clinton just needs to stay in her lane. As Dr. Gillespie has said, she's got a particular demographic she's going to try to talk to. Let her party continue to evolve, because I think I agree with you. I think Democratic Party still got a battle going on. It's a deep schizophrenia. Bernie Sanders has reawakened it. But, you know, I don't know how far, if she pivots it too far to the center, she could lose this election. Because a lot of those people who say they're not going to vote for her weren't going to vote for anybody anyway until they came in to vote for Bernie Sanders. And if they're not careful, we could see a President Trump.
Wow. Dr. Gillespie, your final thoughts about tonight?
So, you know, I think tonight she's got to present herself as human. She's got to present herself as reasonable. And then when this is all done, this is all about GOTV. So I agree with Dr. Carr. Whichever one gets the most people out to vote and has the best GOTV operation wins this election.
I have to say, Dr. Gillespie, that you made an excellent point, because I was on the floor at the RNC when Donald Trump finished his speech, and you're quite correct. There was a lot of I, me. And as we heard from President Obama last night, and perhaps we may hear from Hillary Clinton tonight, there was no I. There was only we and us. And I think that that draws a really sharp contrast between, dare I say, the two parties. And we'll find out whether or not that is the case for the two candidates. Taylor, give us a rundown of what we're going to hear tonight prior to Hillary Clinton's speech.
Well, of course, we're going to have a performance by Katy Perry, and her daughter is going to speak and talk about her mom and a grandmother, and bring that, I really hate using this word, but that softer side. I'm trying to think of something else to say,
yeah.
Because, I mean, I really don't even, and I want to remove that from my vocabulary.
But she's run as a woman. I mean, she has not hidden the fact that she's a woman, and she's trying to say, you know what, women, I mean, it's a stereotype, but women take the moral high ground. Women tend to be kind of the more sane. Women are collaborative. Women get things done. So you can go for the bravado, but does the bravado actually get you anywhere? So I think she wants you to know that she's a woman. She has not run away from that. She
Absolutely.
Has not tried to be tough. Well, so I think that's really, really important.
But she, and what's great about it, which her husband Clinton said, she is, and we can tell. We have seen her life. Her life has played out for us for the last 20-something years. Mm-hmm. So we know she's tough. For those that are needing that softer side, I'm not sure. I think I'll go with the experience versus going with someone needing a softer side. But clearly she's a mother. She is a wife. A dedicated wife, which says a lot to her character about sticking and staying. So, you know, we're looking for a great performance tonight as far as the attendance and what she's going to say to really rally up this crowd and to get them out and get people registered to vote.
There you go, Dr. Gillespie. Let me say, Michelle Obama put it quite well, when they go low, we go high. And so we'll have to see whether or not that happens tonight. Dr. Gillespie, thank you so much. Dr. Carr, always a pleasure.
Always.
Taylor Thomas, thank you so much. Make it home safely. All right.
One day.
There you go. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, July 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR.